Really, it's very touching, and I would like to give a lot of credit to the yeshiva, specifically Rabbi Schwartz, but there were other people involved also. Prior to Rabbi Schwartz, we for years were trying to figure out how to keep connected with our alumni. It was really just a person that once you're a Talmud, we feel close. You get so busy. How are we supposed to keep track of everyone? So we try to keep programs and keep connected. And we're slowly getting into the groove. Rabbi Schwartz is working very hard on it. And it's very, very rewarding for us to be able to spend whatever time we can together. It's also good for the Talmidim in the yeshiva now, just to see that the connection that they have is not going to end like after, after high school or after first year, second year, third year. They can be part of, they see that there's a real connection. Like there was a 12th grade barbecue kumz that's going on. I told him I have to go to the alumni vod. And one guy said, Rebbe, one day I'll be by the alumni vod. You're going to come to the vod. So it's like such a great lesson. Okay, fine. Okay, so let's begin. I can't afford to not start with a joke. And I heard this from my father, Zichrono Bracha, I'm still saying Kaddish. He told me this when he was in, MTJ. So he was very close, obviously, with the Rashiva, with the Moshe, but he was also close with the Mashgiach, Rav Michal Birnbaum. So Rav Michal Birnbaum once said that marriage, it's not as good as the Bachrim think, but it's not as bad as the Jungleites say. So we have all types on the screen. We have people who are just before, hopefully, Bez Hashem, everyone should have a bracha for those looking for Shaduchim, should come very soon. It's not as good as the Bachrim thing, but it's not as bad as the Jungleites say. Don't listen to all the marriage jokes. They're really not true. And I guess we start off with one chazal that I heard a few days ago. I was speaking to Rabbi Mikowitz, and he told me, I asked him, I'm giving this vibe, can he give me one insight, one chazal? He told me, the pasuk in by Chava, v'hayu l'basar echad, when Adam created Chava and Vayilu Basar Echad, so you have to take a look when you have a chance. I'm not going to take the time to read through the Ramban because there's so much to say. But you take a look at the Ramban over there. Mamish says that a person leaves Ovid V'Imo, and Mamish with B'Ishto, they're one. It's not like a cliche. It's Mamish like one. They think like one. It's one entity. And to understand that what one entity is, that it takes time, doesn't happen overnight. The Rosh Hashiva told me, my first year I was married, so I happened to have an appointment. I don't think I had an appointment for this reason, but I asked the Rosh Hashiva the following question. I said, Rebbe, I haven't gotten to an argument with anyone in 10 years. I just never got into arguments with people. That wasn't my challenge. So I said, in my first year of marriage, I already got into an argument with my wife. I got into a disagreement. So I asked him, it wasn't a major disagreement, but it was a disagreement or some kind of argument. I don't remember what it was. And I said, you think the pshat is I'm not happily married? I asked him that. So he told me a word from his father. He said, oh my gosh, I have to stop Yeshua coming in from freezing cold in Cleveland. So the Rashiva said, he heard from his father that the first 5 years of marriage, a girl is closer, is more loyal to her family than to his family, first 5 years. The second 5 years, the girl, the wife, is equal, 50, just as close and loyal to his family as to her family. It's equal. And after 10 years of marriage, the wife is more loyal to his family than to him and to his family than to her family. So which means, just to understand what that is, that means that it could take 10 years. It could take 10 years for all the relationship to gel. So he said in the first month, you know, first year of marriage, if something drops on the floor, a girl's looking to see how quickly her husband is going to bend down to pick it up. How quickly? Everything becomes a referendum on how much does he care for me and love for me. But that doesn't happen simply overnight. I was speaking to Rabbi Yachnis. I was asking everyone for insights because I don't know how often we give a vod like this. It's like, you know, so I don't know if I'm right to give such a vod, but I do feel that it's such an important topic. Oh my gosh, Rabbi Yaakov, it's such an important topic to discuss. It's not like I am the end all brilliant wizard on Shalom Bayis. Believe me, we could all use chizik, all need chizik on it. But just to talk about it, it's a chizik for me also, just to talk about it. So Rabbi Yachnis told me that Rabbi Scheinberg Zatzal probably will go down I don't know about in China, sometimes they have in these, you know, Asian places, that Rabbi Scheinberg and Rebbetzin Scheinberg celebrated their 80th wedding anniversary together. They had an 80th wedding anniversary. So 80 years, you know, of marriage, people are living longer. It's very, very kedai to figure this out. You know, it's very, very kedai. The to mamish be like one is just phenomenal. And the investment, I was speaking to one fellow and they had such trouble at the beginning. He mamish gave himself over, whatever has to be done. And he was mamish kona a diamond. Doesn't always start off that way, kona a diamond. So what I did was I prepared a few different, insights from different sources, gedolim. I'm staying away from the Divrei Torah because I'll leave that for others to go through. There, we could probably find raya's to everything and it probably wouldn't be as enjoyable. Been harder to pair. We'll say a shmooz on it. I mean, Nassim Shaya sends out all the shmoozim anyway. You hear enough shmoozim. So Rabbi Yachnis told me after Rabbi Scheinberg, he recently sat Shiva, Rabbi Yachnis, for his mother. She was an old lady. She's probably also by near 100. And he told me that his parents, his father, for 65 years of marriage, every single night from their chasana at night, asked her mechila. I was pretty positive. I joked with him at the ship. I said, wow, he's constantly guilty. I never asked my wife mechila. You know, but it's that's something to deherit that it's going to be to try and work on it to that level where every single night you wanted to make it perfect is just, you know, amazing. On that note, the famous Vayilu Basar Echad, so Rabbi Levine, this is a famous quip, that he went to the doctor and with his wife, and the doctor said, what can I do for you? So the Rabbi Levine Zatzal said, my wife's foot is hurting us. As a Maisa Shoya, my wife's foot is hurting us. So that's the level of sensitivity of relationship that we strive for, that we push for, and we have to work on it. It's not like it happens automatically. We work on it to feel someone else's pain. No say ba'al, but especially the akara of like a spouse, that our foot is hurting us. Rabbi Levine, I was doing some research. So he, it's customary to give a gift to the kala. I'm not trying to say minhagim or traditions. Hasidim have different things and Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. I'm just saying there's a custom out there. I'm not saying if you didn't do it, you have to do it, you know. But in the Yichud room, the Chosan gives the Kala a gift. So the story goes, it's been corroborated that Rabbi Levine in the Yichud room told his wife that I have no money to give you. I couldn't buy a gift. So therefore, since I have no gift to give you, so I'm giving you full veto rights. He said, if ever we have a disagreement, the gift he gave his wife in the Yichud rooms, I'll be mevater. So Rabbi Levine was, the rest of his life, was mevater anytime they had a disagreement. That was his gift to his wife in the Yichud room. Is very, 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 very powerful. I heard this maisa, you know, after Rabbi Bluth was nifter, a couple of years ago. So the story came out. I love this story because we could all, you know, relate to it. We could all assent or inspire ourselves to do it, elevate ourselves to do it. There are a lot of us, you know, myself included, who may not be on the Madriga to do it. But when I heard the story, I said, my gosh, oh my gosh, listen to this Maisa. And Rabbi Bluth was just Nifter. He was one of us, you know, a chash of a rav, but so he had, you know, he was very close to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. And he had thousands and thousands of tshuvas from Moshe that he always said, you know, in his retirement, he's gonna write them over. You know, suck him. He had, you know, Rabbi Neiman Zatzal was part of that Chabura on Sunday mornings, and Rabbi First and Rabbi Shimon Eider. And they had a Chabura. They used to go every Sunday to Rabbi Moshe to get all his, you know, to pass and all the Shailas. And every time he wrote one up and he put it into a case, and it had to be written up in the Shailas and Tshuva Sefer. It takes time. He had to get to it. And he had them in a big box. But also, Rabbi Bluth did not have a lot of money. He lived in Kensington and for a while, and eventually went out to New Jersey. And he, money was not one of his, zuchusim. But people used to send, he was on everyone's list, and he constantly would get envelopes in the mail. We probably all bombarded with envelopes in the mail, envelopes, envelopes, envelopes. So what do you do? I don't know what I do. I don't have time to do all these things. The stacks and stacks come in, and probably after a while, I tell my wife to take care of it. She probably, you know, throws it out, or the ones that we know about, hopefully not the yeshivas. Hopefully those we save, but you know, all the other ones that I know, I marginally know, you know, Yeshiva Katana of, Mississippi or whatever, Passaic, I try and give them something. I got to send them $10 or whatever. So after a while, I know what happens to them. They disappear. It's like the Tanoim. No one ever knows what happens to the Tanoim, you know, that they signed by the Chasam. So he didn't want to throw them out. So he didn't have money to give. So he took all of them and he would always save them in a box. And he told his wife would ask him, what are you saving them for? He says, one day I'm going to get money, Bez Hashem. One day I'll get money and I'll give. Why should I throw it out? If I have the money, I'll give. I'm only not giving now, I don't have the money, but let's save the envelope. So he had, you know, it started with tens and 20, it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of envelopes he was saving. Anyway, she was cleaning up the Pesach. One Pesach, and she said, my husband, it's already a couple of decades, this envelopes flying out from all over the place. It's genug shayim. He's never going to know about it. It's sitting in the bottom of this closet. He never goes to it. She took the whole box and she threw it out. You probably already figured out the rest of the story. But one day, Vayehi Bayom, and he went and he wanted to do a little work on Rav Moshe's tshuvas. And she had told him that, you know, genug shayim, she threw it out. When he went to look for the tshuvas, he went into that closet And he sees in the closet, the only box that's there is all the envelopes from the Stuckers. And she threw out the wrong box. She threw out the box with the thousands of tshuvas for a Moshe that he built up over a few decades, and kept the box with all of the Stuckers checks. And that's like, you know, the kiflayim, you know, it's bad if you threw that out, but you kept me all the Stucker envelopes. So anyway, he never told his wife Ad Yom Moser. She predeceased him. He never told his wife that she threw out the wrong box. I challenge everyone. When I heard that story, I started clapping a lot of al chetz. He never told his wife that he threw out, that she threw out the wrong box. Never. And that's a powerful, like Viter, powerful. It's a powerful, powerful mindset. You got to cry when you hear that story. I got to tell you this, Rav Shach. So Rav Shach, he had two krovim who were in a machlokas. Is anyone here speak Yiddish? Yitzi, you speak Yiddish yet? No, it doesn't come with age. I don't speak Yiddish either, but I'm going to say it over very slowly. I don't speak Yiddish either, but this I understood. So he had two relatives who were in a machlokas. I wrote it down. I said, even for a Chofetz Chaim alumni vod, I'm going to say it over in Yiddish. And I think even our guys will understand it. Listen to what Rav Shach said. Is Ashad Azaibeda Vesenisht the Ziskite Funzein Amavater? It's what a calamity, what a shame that both of them do not understand the sweetness that it is to be a Mavater, to be able to forego and to give in. It's very powerful to give in. But I'm talking to myself. It's very, very powerful to be able to give in. It's a midah that has to be cultivated, of course. It's like Mavra Midosa Vishtikal, but you just connected with that story of Reb Luth. Is there any greater carbon than to have been? I mean, there was nothing he could do, but sometimes just saying, how could you do that, is what you could do. It's like there's sweetness in that also, but it's sweeter. Just to be a mevater. Okay, when I told Rabbi Schwartz to write down that this is for only people in the parsha and married, I had this particular thing that I wanted to say over. I thought it was not appropriate for people not in the parsha at all yet. So I just want to say this because I don't know how long people could say, but I want to say this over. And I checked this out with Rabbi Minkowitz also. I just wanted to know if he felt like I you know, it's Oiska Halpin, but it's definitely true. The question is, should I say it? I don't want to say it. I think it's very important. Okay, first, to start off, the word ahava, which is love, ahava, the root of the word is hav, is to give. I'm saying over double push it right now. I'm just applying it. Ahava is to give. So in everyone's ksuba, so there's a chiv of sher ksus ba'ona. Okay? Share ksus ba'ona, okay. You know, room, clothing, board. Ba'ona is, you know, intimacy. So, and this is the board that the goyim don't get. You know, this is a Torah concept that the chiyuv of share ksus ba'ona is on the man, is an obligation of share ksus ba'ona. So the hair with that is that the Torah expects that the subject, the whole relationship, and the whole angle of how we understand ona, is that this is a chesed for the male to the female. It's so the opposite of the world, which is just the hair, that this point, it's so the opposite of the rest of the world, where the expectation of the media and you know, Hollywood is the opposite, that it's very skewed to the male receiving, and that's not a Torah concept. So just to hear that point, I mean, it's Koshke and everything else. That and what's the pshat in that? Pshat is chesed. We are put into the greatest position to be gomel chesed. Every aspect is chesed. Sherexus la'ona. There's no greater raya that the Torah is so diametrically opposed. I remember seeing in my youth a one of these tabloids, whether it was, I don't remember which one, and if I did, I probably wouldn't admit it, that there was this movie star and her husband got married, and they got divorced after 9 days. They got divorced after 9 days. So I couldn't resist, and I read the article, and they interviewed them, and I don't know if it was he or she, I do remember who they were, but I'm not gonna say, and they wrote, "We just couldn't work things out." They just couldn't work things out. Now, of course, when we're not talking about things, sometimes a situation has to end. You know, that's al pidas Torah. But just we're talking about within the confines of Torah. Let me go on. So, this is one of the funniest stories. So, Rav Shach, you know, now I didn't take the time to speak about Rav Kinnerik Zatzal because not everyone had Shachar Torah Kinnerik. So. But believe me, we're working on making a hesped next week, hopefully, for a Kinnerik, who had such a impact on so many people. It's kedai for anyone who can to plug in. This is just a powerful. But this story, you know, Rav Shach in his youth, Rav Shach lived till 100, over 100. So he went sit over this maisa that when he was a Bacher, he was invited to the Suddah Shabbos of the altar. Right? So he went to the Suddah Shabbos. He was in the altar Suddah Shabbos. Like, you know, altar invited the Bacher over, I guess. So Rav Shach was Elazar, you know, as for Elazar Menachem Man Shach, that was his name. So he was sitting at the table with Rabbi and Mrs. Shot with Rabbi and Mrs. Alter, or whatever, Finkel. So the Alter, at the end of the Suda, the Alter's wife served compote, okay, for dessert. It's like a fruit, some kind of, you know, cooked fruit for dessert. So Rav Shach, after tasting, took a bite, and after tasting it, he couldn't eat it because it was very, very bitter. And the altar, this is Rav Shach is telling the story, and the altar is staring at him. This mice is brought down in a sefer, I think that Rabbi Yomi Orenstein gave me, called B'didi Hava Uvda. It's a great sefer with all these mice. You get that sefer, and you probably never have to get another sefer. If you ever have to look up a story on 50 different subjects, they have all the Gedolim stories in there. I don't know how one person could remember. I can't, if you ask me to tell a story, if I wasn't prepared, I would, if you asked me to tell me any story, I wouldn't remember not one story. And this Sefer has like 1,000 of them. So, and they're all accurate, they to the T, with a picture of the Gedol in the story. So the altar is looking, and it's obvious that he's not eating it because it's too bitter to eat. Couldn't eat it. So the altar said to him, "If you don't eat this, I'm going to have to, after I finish eating mine, I'm going to have to eat yours. It's already been over 40 years that I'm eating this compote." 40 years he's eating this compote, bitter, like molasses, and he's eating it for 40 years. I had this maisa, that's amazing maisa, but it had this nice, when I was in Magen Av, Olav Shalom, when I was in Magen Av, so I was trying to make, to help when the Reshiva was coming, I think after the Rebbetzin was Nifter, so we helped organize a place for Reshiva to come. There are people I see on the screen, maybe may have been there when this happened. And Reb Shlingos and Harris came down in early, you know, like a week before, just to figure out what would work out, you know, and they were trying to work out, you know, what does Reshiva eat and his menu, and he wouldn't be all down to the dining room, they're gonna bring up the dining room to him. So like the first day that he came, they gave him his, brought up the oatmeal. Now, I was Reshiva's secretary for a year. I could tell you that the Reshiva had oatmeal for breakfast, a big bowl of oatmeal and a big, big glass of tea. I never saw such a big glass of tea in my life. And the Reshiva needed the tea to be piping hot. So if it got a little cold, the Rebbetzin would add more. Rebbetzin al HaShalom would, I was secretary when the first Rebbetzin was, you know, living. And so he had this, you know, thing of oatmeal. And when he came to camp, so they brought him the oatmeal. And you want to guess what Reshiva said? Reshiva said he doesn't like oatmeal. He didn't like oatmeal. It's mamish the same story. I just preparing for tonight, I saw this story from Rav Shach with the altar. He said, for 40 years already, I'm already eating this compote, and you better eat it. And if you don't, how about that, a threat from the altar? And if you don't eat it, I'm going to have to eat yours too. You know, so you have to learn. You can eat the compote. This is mind-boggling. Okay, let me say anything else I want to add before I take some questions. I want to take some questions. I mean, just one piece of hashkafa I think is worthy to say over, that the you know, it says in Moran Sotla says that 40 days called them Yetziras HaVlad, 40 days before the Yetzira of the Vlad, I don't know when that is, before the Vlad is formed. So the Machriz and Bas Poni Laploni. So they announced that he's marrying her, like Shabu Chama Maid in Shemayim, as a famous Chazal. So the obvious question is, I always had this question, like, why do they have to make the Shaduchim 40 years Kodem Yetziras HaVlad? I mean, you could wait till they're three, wait till they're four. I mean, well, why Bedavka 40 days? What's the pshat 40 days before Kodem Yetziras HaVlad? So the Rav Kahneman, the Panovich Rashiva said as follows. He says, just like the Ava before the Guf is created is an Ava that has, there's no cheshman to it. It's like pure, like no one can have any svara, or they look alike. There's you know, no personality. There's no Guf. There's no anything. Can't know anything. There's no cheshman. So the Ava that's already put in is without cheshman. So we give a bracha that the shidduch, but it takes place that the ava should always remain without cheshbonos. Every time we get, you know, we get married, then there was already cheshbonos. He did this, she did this. We already have cheshbonos. We want to always try and be to remember the ava that was without any cheshbonos. And the Chazon Ish used to say that Shalom Bayis does not mean that there should not be machlokas. That's not Shalom Bayis. Shalom Bayis doesn't mean that there's no riv, there's no machlokas. So Shalom Bayis means that he brings a raya that, he brings raya, okay, I forgot the raya, but it's much, much more than that. There's every darga of more harmony and symphony and achdus is Shalom Bayis. There's not yes Shalom Bayis, no Shalom Bayis. There's constant madregas and madregas of Shalom Bayis, And ultimately, it's the ultimate milas chesed. Okay, so that's those are the, I figured, like the marmakoma, so to speak, for the you know, for the vad. But I figured like there were some questions came in, not that many, but I figured I'll read the questions and then we'll open up the floor to anyone that has specific things on anything that was said, or they may have new questions, or we could just schmooze. Either all of them are fine. I love all of them. Okay, here we go. Does emotional support, I love this question. Does emotional support mean more than just validation? You know, you have to be careful with validation because people could think it's manipulation. Like the wife said, I had a hard day at work. Well, you had a very hard day at work. You know, validation cannot be very, sometimes cannot be very supportive. You know, emotional support is when you nosei ba'ol. And nosei ba'ol, when you jump to their side, like try to initiate. You know that there's let's say a spouse has difficulty at the job or at something else, and you anticipate how you could help, and you think about it in advance. It's that's the ultimate validation. We know validation as, you know, it's like a script. You know, the guidance counselors have a way to do validation. I used to speak with David Holtzman here. We discussed this. I remember discussing this topic, validation. But the ultimate validation is when the person feels that they're understood. They're understood. So how does a person feel understood? They feel understood when you're there. You're there for them, and without asking, they don't have to ask for it. You know, I'm telling you, I'm good chizik for everyone, for myself. We have to be there. That's the ultimate validation. You can't do validation just in words with a spouse. You have to, with action, you have to validate. So I would say that it's much more than validation, yes. But if we do really great validation, it could be emotional support. But the word validation has come to mean that you say yes, I see you're having, you feel that it's very hard. It has to be real. So somebody might want to follow up on that in a minute. So I'm just giving an overview. Okay, let's go to the next one. Situation in the world is not simple. How does one ignore the immoralities of the office? It's just a fascinating question. And world, while keeping a life of kedusha with one spouse. So I don't want to say I had the great skills. I had the great opportunity to. I was at a meeting with 30 rabbanim to meet Mike Pence a couple of months ago. Came to Miami. Trump was supposed to come, but I was called and I went. I'm not sure why. It took like 3-4 hours in downtown Miami somewhere, but I did see Mike Pence, and they selected like 8 people to ask questions. So one of the people that asked the question, some Lubavitcher, which I really give him a lot of credit for asking this question. It wasn't a question. He just made a statement. He got up and he said, you know, Mr. Vice President, the Jewish people believe that the greatest act that one could possibly do in the world is to sanctify God's name. He's a religious guy, Pence. And he said, what you said during the 2016 campaign, that you would not go to a restaurant with another woman unless your wife was there, was one of the greatest acts he has ever heard, and help restore some of the morality to a world that's gone absolutely crazy. And Mike Pence appreciated that. He stood by it. He remembers saying it. He said it not by accident, and he said it. But unfortunately, you don't hear too much. There's a frum lawyer who told me that at his company, there's almost a campaign amongst many women and men that there is almost like a race to see who can have affairs with married people, more married people. The world is mamish crazy. And you know, many of us have to, we're working, we have to, so to speak, segue into a secular world. So the only way to do it is to make very clear boundaries. I don't do that. So this one person told me that he will not go to any party. They know he will not. There has to be like a red line. You just don't do it. And it's very, very hard otherwise to negotiate. Every single day something else happens. There has to be mamish gvul, a gvul to be made. And this is a fantastic, you know, question, to ignore the immoralities of the office while keeping a life of kedusha with one spouse. This is a great, great, great question, because it's real. It's real. It's real in the secular world. I'll tell you an amazing maisa that was documented, that in the 1950s, when there was a great push by the Israeli government to draft girls into the army. So the obviously the Gedolim made a big macha. So Ben Gurion wasn't, he realized he wasn't going to win that. So he changed it to Sherit Lumi, which was they weren't going, they didn't have to go fight, no combat, but they'll just get desk jobs, because the military needs secretaries also. So thinking that the Gedolim would take, what's the secretary job? What's wrong with that, being a secretary? Nothing wrong with being a secretary. So the Ben Gurion thought that would work. The Gedolim made the same mecha, Yehard Vayavar, and the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish said it, and the Stipler, Rav Shach, the people who are fighting, the Brisker Rav, they said mamish. It's not a figure of speech. Like we say a lot of things, Harav al Yavar. Like, you know, you can get a, you know, principal of high school. Listen, anyone goes into the car and leaves the campus, you know, during the school day without giving permission, it's Harav al Yavar. That's a figure of speech. We're not really going to kill them. But the Gedolim said, Harav al Yavar. And that means that if they come, if the police come, you know, you have to be taken. And usher. So a group of Rabbonim, I'm not being political here, but a group of Rabbonim, you know, I think the more Mizrahi Rabbonim, who were trying to understand what was so terrible, they went to the Chazon Ish, and they asked him, like they went through all the Shulchan Aruch, where does it say that a woman can have a desk job? Where does it say that you can't do that? So there are different reports, but I'll explain it afterwards. So according to one version of the story, which is probably the way it happened, but it's not politically correct. But according to one version, the Brisker Rav said that you won't find it because it's in the fifth chelek Shulchan Aruch, and that was only given over to Talmid Chacham. That's according to one version of the story. But I heard that when they did press him, that he did explain. He said a girl is only allowed by halacha, is only allowed, this we do know, is only allowed to be under the jurisdiction of her father or her husband, a Jewish girl. That's the Das Torah, that a girl can only be under the jurisdiction of her father or her husband. And therefore, she can't take a job in the military, even as a desk job. So they asked him, but what do you mean? People have jobs. Well, they take jobs. What's the difference? He says, no, there's a very big difference, because if the boss ever tries anything, she can quit. But in the military, you can't quit. You get court-martialed. You can't quit. So that means the Gedolim understood that this is in the 1950s. The 1950s in Eretz Yisrael understood the situation, and they understood that the vulnerability for znus and immorality was so great that they said it was Yehard Val Yavar for a girl to join the army, to even as a desk job. And at one point, I understand it, Ben Gurion did go to meet with the Chazon Ish, came to the Chazon Ish to meet with him, and they had like a 40-minute meeting back and forth, and they were, it was like a banter back and forth. And at one point, Ben-Gurion got upset, and he stood up and he told the Chazon Ish, he said, Rabbi, I'm saying it in Hebrew, I'll stop saying English. He said, in the end of the day, we're stronger than you are. We have police, we have military. You're not going to win. We're going to win. He had finished arguing this. We are stronger than you are. So the Chazon Ish stood up and he said, Mr. Prime Minister, let me ask you a question. Who is stronger? Somebody who says, do this or I'll shoot? Or the person who says, go ahead and shoot? Who is stronger? And with that, Ben-Gurion understood that the Chazon Ish won, because of course, the person who says, go ahead and shoot is stronger. And in the end, they did pass the law to draft the women, but it was never enforced. It was never enforced. That's according to the Brisker Rav biography. And it was anyone who has issues like this, you know, to immorality in the workplace, it's kedai to just talk it over with a Rav or a Rebbe. Like, sometimes you just need good tachbulas, if you can't think of it on your own, to come up with good, you know, tachbulas to do it. It's a very, very serious thing. And nobody should think that there's a lot of entrapment going on. And someone told me that they in their place, he knows for a fact that there's a contest to see who can ensnare married people. Okay, if a husband feels like he can connect to his wife through spiritual growth, is there a way he can encourage his wife to daven or say Tehillim? Smallest amount possible. If yes, what's the best way and piece to encourage to say? If no, how can the husband feel a stronger connection? You know, I think it's important to note that men and women are very, very different spiritually. You know, they're very, very different. For a, I'm not so sure it's such a good idea to tell the spouse to daven or say tehillim. I don't know if that's such a good idea. I can't see that coming out right. I can't figure that out. You know, well, women are very spiritual. They're very spiritual. They could, first of all, they yotze tefila with just one yearning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu a day. They yotze tefila. For us, it takes three tefilas, and even then, who knows if we yotze one of them. You know, kavanah in the three brachas, where we have our own problems. But I'm not so sure I would do that. We tend to think that if they daven, then it makes us feel like we're doing proper mashkiach over our b'nei b'esa. I don't think it works that way. You know, I don't think it works that way. The husband should daven. You know, what did the stipler said? If you want it, this for children also. The question for spouse, but we're having a parenting session. This would be the same questions. The stipler said, how do I get my kid to daven? So the stipler said, if you want to get your kid to daven, daven. So that's all you should do. Just daven. You daven. You daven, Bez Hashem, will daven. Daven, you know, hearts it. Daven for real. You have to daven. I always joke, you know, the first time I was a counselor in Magen Av, so they didn't have the 2 days of before camp that they ended up having. They used to meet at the Agud on 16th Avenue for one night, the week before camp. Everyone had to come. And Rabbi Steinhardt spoke, and Rabbi Sachs spoke. And that was the orientation. I'll never forget. So Rabbi Sachs said, I was an 11th grader. I was coming as a JC for the first summer as a staff member. I ended up being a counselor because they ran out of counselors. So I never was a JC. And Rabbi Sachs said, you know, don't say that, oh, who am I to tell the kids to daven? I myself, I'm not such a great davener. You know, now you're the mommy, the tati, and the Rebbe. Now you have to daven. You know, don't say, who am I to do it? So my brother tells over the funniest. his first year as a counselor. So he was there in the shul, and he told the kid to stop talking during davening. And the kid says, my father's minig is to talk. So if a person wants to know, you know, if in the house the davening is real, and situations have the Ribono Shalom's, you know, stamp on it, and that's what you're pushing, and it's real, it rubs off. And you know, I don't think that, you know, start keeping Tehillims in every room. Maybe they'll pick up a Tehillim. I don't know. Those things usually come about, you know, as needs come up, as time comes up. I think the worst thing to do is probably to recommend it, suggest it. You know, you can go together sometimes if there's someone who's, if you see a wife is particularly interested in a particular speaker, you can go together. You know, that's okay. So someone that they particularly like. Learning, I tried many times to learn with my wife. You know, I think we're just not good chavrusas. We did learn, we have different schedules and different, but I think you would like, I think we tried a few times to learn, you know, but I don't know if that's the, I don't think that's the mitzvah to learn with the wife. It's, you're one, it's v'hayil basar echad, whatever you're doing is her. It's not like, oh, she gets your schusim, it's ishto kegufo, it's more than ishto kegufo, it's v'hayil basar echad, it's one. So I would suggest to hold off on that. Call me privately if I could be a more specific help. And this last question that I got, someone sent to me, I think Rabbi Schwartz sent to me, what can be done to instill good communication skills? So this, I was speaking to, we have a halacha rabbi, Rabbi Laredo, who's teaching for us, so he was a rabbi of a shul. I asked him tonight, I said, we had this kumzitz and I was leaving. So I asked him if he has any insight. So he told me to say over to the guys that there's different languages. So just because you have, you know, English and your wife knows English doesn't mean you're speaking the same language. So what can be done to instill good communication skills? This is so important. I'm giving a vod on Sunday night to the high school. Rabbi Schlissel asked me to give this vod. And I'm giving a vod called Crucial Conversations. People don't know how to have a conversation just to be open to communicate what they want. Like, think about it. Like, how do you tell a teacher you're struggling? How do you tell your chavrusa that it's not working out? How do you tell anyone it's not happening? A lot of people have it is difficult, but I don't want to call it an art, a lost art, just how to communicate. And the people who communicate bluntly are viewed as tough and ruthless, but at the end of the day, you know where they stand. So you got to find the balance, of course, but crucial conversations. But people should not assume with a spouse, especially male and female, have totally different understanding of language, what certain things mean. I once read, Rabbi Orlowick had this book he wrote, the river, the bird and the kettle. It was fantastic to explain the differences in understanding between men and women. It was Torah Dick, is very, very kedai, if you never saw it, to read that. Communication skills, the best thing I would say is like this, communication skills. And before, I mean, used to always give sessions on empathic listening. And he would say as follows, this is what you do. Let's say we're having a conversation, okay? So let's say Dovin Holtzman and I are having a conversation, which we had many. So what I would do is, we want to make a resolution, we want to resolve a conflict. So I would say like this, I'm going to tell David what I'm saying, and then David's going to repeat what I said, and then he's going to ask me, is there anything that I said that was off, or I leave anything out, or anything you want to add that I left out, or anything you want to take out that I just said that I didn't say? And then he gets to do that. And then I say, okay, now you have exactly right. Then David speaks. And then I, without interrupting him, have to listen to the entire mount, the entire speech. And then I have to do the same thing. I have to, you know, he has to tell him what, you know, if what was said was exactly right. That's the only way to ensure that everyone got it right. That you spoke and a spouse listened, or a spouse spoke and you listened, you have absolutely no way to know that you're both understanding it the same way. You know, no way to know. There was a famous, I don't know if it was a Purim spiel or really happened, but they say in the old days in Rochester, so there was a machlokas, Rabbi Harris. I guess the people in Queens can check this story out. It could be just a Purim spiel, but I remember hearing the story that Rabbi David Harris and Rabbi Menachem Davidowitz were the Rosh Yeshivas in Rochester. And there was a machlokas on Gaiva Bizman Hazeh. Is there Gaiva Bizman Hazeh? So they called the Rosh Yeshiva. They're both on their extensions. And they spoke to the Rosh Yeshiva. And when the phone call was over, they both hung up their phones. They went out into the hallway and they all said, Rosh Yeshiva said like me, you know? So unless we check for understanding afterwards, if the way to upgrade communication skills is for each person to say, and that the other person say it over, and the first person to have a chance to correct, and then do the same thing the other way. So any other questions, comments, disagreements? You're welcome to disagree with everything I said. You could say I tried it, the worst advice ever. I could tell you that most of the things, you know, everyone has to work on Shalom Bayis. It's one of the greatest avoda. And I'm open for all questions on any topic. I guess we start with this topic, but.
Yeah, how do we take the compote story, I guess, no pun intended, but bite size, and work our way up to the full bowl, so to speak, in terms of the level of the altar?
I think it is it's a good muscle to flex. So find something, anything, that you could be mevater on. Find anything that you can mevater on. Like, let's say, you know, it could be something you don't normally do, but you start doing it. Anything that's different than normal, that shows either like a validation we spoke about. And think this month, do one thing a day. And, you know, we'll build up to that Rav Shach story. It's a fascinating story, the altar. Just do one thing a day. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be with a spouse either.
You're something small. Are we saying something small though? Not something big.
Something small. I'll tell you Maisa. Well, I was teaching 10th grade many, many moons ago in the old building. Is anyone on this? So you'd see. So the old building on 71st Street. So it wasn't your class. I'm trying to think, was it before or after? Probably after. So I was teaching upstairs in the balcony. For those that remember, there's the balcony. And it was a very, very difficult class. I knew going in. So I took upon myself at the beginning of the year, a very small Kabbalah, that no matter what happens, I will never get upset in the classroom. I will never get upset. No matter what they do, I will never get upset. Because the only way I'm going to lose them, the only way any teacher or rebbe loses when you get angry. So no matter what happens in that classroom, I'm not going to get upset. So I mamish went through the entire year, and I did get upset one time, but I hold it wasn't, I'm putter from being a carbon, whatever, for breaking a ned there, because it was a life-threatening situation going on. There was a guy standing up on a chair throwing batteries at everyone. So then I yelled, but...
What size battery?
But that was the only... But listen to what happened. So I was coming up the steps, and the boys wanted to lock me out of the room. But how could you lock me out of the room? They took... There were two staircases going on up either side of this of the room from the downstairs. On one side, the yeshiva stored all their extra desks and chairs, just like piled into like a dump. And the, so what they did is they took all the chairs in the classroom and they blocked the entire staircase on both sides by throwing all the desks and chairs, like intermingled. They just threw them. They couldn't care less. And you couldn't access, they couldn't get down either, but they didn't care. And but I couldn't get in. So I took off my jacket. I took off my tie. I took off my shoes. And backwards, I shimmied my way through desks and those cages underneath the desks. And it took me about 15 minutes. The boys were laughing so hard. I shimmied my way backwards up until I got to the top of the steps. And by that time, my socks were off. Everything was off. And I got to the top. And they stood up and they simply applauded. And I said, guys, you got me today, but I made it to the top. Let's get the desks together and let's learn. And I accomplished that only because of the Vitor. I didn't get upset at them. It's very, very powerful. It's like Rav Shach said, like, what's the expression? Us is a shud, a zeya beda, both of them, vesenish the ziskite, when Zainam about there. It's so sweet, but I don't know. I wouldn't say it was sweet. It was powerful. You are a champion. When I reached the top, I realized, you know, from metaphorically, I reached the top, but I reached the top. It was the person who grew the most that year was me. And I did it as an act of survival, but it's very kedai. Yeah, start with the smallest thing. It doesn't have to be with a spouse. You could do it at work. You could do it with anyone. Just start. They say if you want to work on taiva, just put down. Just like, you know, leave over one thing on your plate. Then I was speaking to Rabbi Lubin. He said that as Katan Doris, he wouldn't say leave one thing on. That's too hard. But don't eat it right away. Wait, don't eat it right away. Just, you know, you can eat it, but just don't eat it at the beginnings. Wait, go slower.
If you leave something over, you might get in trouble.
Yeah, like the compost story. So that's a good question. Fascinating story. Now, is that Menachem Schreiber? Oh my gosh.
Hello, Rebbe.
Oh my gosh, where are you? Are you like in Canada?
I'm actually in the UK. It's about 3 a.m. here. So,
oh my,
forgive me for joining late.
Oh my gosh. First of all, I thought you were in Canada. How did you get to the UK?
My wife's English. So,
oh my gosh. I haven't seen you in ages. You're looking pretty good.
Thank you very much. Again, my apologies for my attire, but.
Oh my
I have to get up in the middle of the night, so.
Look, we got